the music. Cut the music.
I think I got my swagger back.
Spectacular group of men. You go find them, you throw your arms around them, you give them a big kiss on the mouth if you're a girl.
Oh, the band is out on the field. He's going to go into the end zone.
There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Like poison. Like rat poison.
Are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys?
And welcome to the College Football Country Podcast. My name is Josh Parcell, founder of College Football Country, CFBCountry.com. Thank you guys so much for listening, for downloading, subscribing. Don't forget, go leave a review on the podcast site wherever you're listening. Go leave a podcast review. If it's 5 stars and you leave a name of your favorite or most random college football player ever, you're entered into that drawing for a $25 Amazon gift card. We're getting very close. Less than 30 to go now before we hit 150. Once we hit 150 reviews, if you're listening to the podcast, I will award the best name drop the winner, and you'll get to email me for your prize money. $25 Amazon gift card could be yours. So make sure you're leaving those reviews. Thank you guys again so much for listening. Today, it's Chris Cotter from ESPN. He's going to join me first to talk about all sorts of stuff. We get into Jim Harbaugh, the Big Ten race, the disappointment that has been the Big Ten. We talk about the Big 12, which is another very, very tightly contested conference right now. And then we talk most disappointing teams right now. You'll never believe how many top 10 teams have two or more losses, preseason top 10 teams. Have two or more losses already. It's only October 15th. So we talked to Chris about that. And then stick around because I have my JP Top 10. Not only will I do the JP Top 10, I will predict the final record for every team in my Top 10 right now. I've got the Top 10 playoff resumes through Week 7, and then I'll project where I think those teams will end up at the end of the year. And I've got a couple curveballs for you that I think are going to happen as we look how the rest of the season is going to play out. So I'll give you my projections for that as well. And I end with my now weekly playoff prediction. Who is in, who would be in the playoff field if it was up to me? How do I think that's going to shake out? Thank you guys again. Now we'll get to Chris Cotter of ESPN. Thrilled to welcome on Chris Cotter from ESPN to the College Football Country Podcast. Chris, you know, normally I like to introduce my guests and give their credentials, but I feel like I can hardly keep up with everything that you do. So I'm going to turn it over to you, and you let the listeners in on just what the heck you're up to right now.
Credentials is probably a little strong, but I will tell everyone what I'm doing, which is a gazillion different things. In studio on Saturdays for ESPN2, ESPNU, all the games. So I'll be doing half times and in between games with Jim Moore and Emmanuel Acho. And then on Sundays, I do Who's In Championship Drive. That's a show we do that airs usually at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. That's kind of a review of the day that happened before. And all of our panelists give who they think should be in the playoff if the season were to end today. So that's on Sunday afternoon. Then I'll do either a college football live or two during the week, or I'll be out on the road calling games. I did Ivy League games, which is a new thing this year for ESPN. We picked up the Ivy League package. So on Friday nights, we do a bunch of Ivy League games, and that was a blast doing those games with Jack Ford, who's a former Yale defensive back. And then I do Sun Belt games in October, and we do a couple of Sun Belt games. I was in Arkansas State this past week, and then next week, I'll be in Mobile for Troy in South Alabama. And then in November, the MAC, as they have every year, they go to all midweek games. So the entire conference will be playing games on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And we pick up virtually all of those games can be seen on either ESPN2 or ESPNU. So I'll be doing a game a week with Desmond Howard and Clay Kessnick.
That MAC's got to be great. And, you know, Chris, I was going to ask you I'm doing a contest with our listeners where I'm letting them leave podcast reviews. And when they leave their review, they have to drop a name, the most random college football player they can think of. And I've gotten some good ones. I've had some incredible name drops in the reviews. You, as a expert on the MAC now, can you pull a MAC name out for me? Because I feel like the MAC might have the best. Like if we did an all-conference, all-name team, we're getting pretty deep here. I feel like the MAC would probably win this over the last like 10 years. There have been some incredible ones. Kobe Buffalo Meat, I know back in the day, I believe was a MAC guy.
Kobe Buffalo Meat was outstanding. So, I mean, my favorite name of all time is not a Mac player, but I can never get around Weston Steelhammer, the fact that he is a safety. Yeah. I mean, if you were gonna name a safety, Weston Steelhammer would have to be one of them, or Wave Rider. Now, you think of a guy named Wave Rider, what school would you think he would not attend? One of the military academies, of course. Of course, he goes to Air Force. Like, to me, Wave Rider, if he's playing football, he's playing at Hawaii or, you know, Pepperdine or something like that. No, he goes to one of the most structured schools you could possibly go to in Air Force. But those are my two favorites, Weston Steelhammer and Wave Rider, for sure.
I got a Rocky Kalmus this week in the reviews, which is a textbook linebacker name, too, back in the day from Oklahoma.
Yeah. Remember Michael Stonebreaker from Notre Dame?
Yes.
Back in the late 80s, early 90s, Stonebreaker is an awesome name for a linebacker.
Yes. Yes, that's good. Well, I love that one. Wave Rider, that's the first Wave Rider name drop we've had in the podcast.
Awesome.
So that's fantastic. You might win the contest, Chris. I don't know if you're eligible, but that's okay.
What's my prize if I win?
A $25 Amazon gift card. Pretty big here.
What?
I know, we go
nice.
Hard. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The budget has really picked up.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I started feeling myself a little bit, so I decided to let the listeners in on the action. Hey, man, well, I know we don't have a ton of time, so let's talk some actual football. Crazy week. And look, one thing I don't like to do on this podcast is if you want to get at your Alabama talk, you can get it in 100 other places. So I kind of just moved them off to the side. We'll talk about the Crimson Tide later. A team that caught my eye last weekend was Michigan, and just an authoritative win over Wisconsin. I have been a Jim Harbaugh defender for quite a while now, and I know the microscope was on him coming into this season, and they lose to Notre Dame in week one, and all of a sudden that pressure really starts to amp up in Ann Arbor. How far did he go on Saturday to silencing those critics?
I mean, I think it was certainly a step in the right direction, because we all know what his record is in big games against the Ohio States and the Michigan States of the world. So to be able to take on a Wisconsin team, and, you know, I think everybody looks at those Big Ten teams in the East and says, okay, and I'll even throw Wisconsin in that group in the beginning of the year and says, here are your hurdles. Here are the big games. If you want to win a championship in the Big Ten and you want to compete for a spot in the playoff, these are your four or five major hurdles. And so in the past, Michigan hasn't been able to leap over those hurdles. Ohio State has, even Michigan State has, even Penn State has, in terms of getting to the Big Ten championship game or winning Big Ten championships, and Michigan hasn't been able to do it. And now it's sort of like, okay, here's one hurdle. You didn't clear the Notre Dame hurdle, but you cleared the first hurdle, big-time hurdle in the Big Ten in Wisconsin. Now you got another one coming up this week in Michigan State.
You know,
It's sort of evolving in the Big Ten, though, don't you think? Because of the way last week, you know, 2 weeks ago, Penn State was all the rage. Now, all of a sudden, they lose two in a row at home, and Michigan State, who people had given up for. I saw them play that game against Central Michigan a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, they're not good at all. Michigan State is not very good. Now, all of a sudden, just 2 weeks later, I'm thinking, okay, they're a team that I don't think they're going to win the Big Ten, but they're a team that can cause some damage. So I think it's an amoeba, the Big Ten. It's ever flowing.
It you're exactly right. It's changed week to week. And, you know, I think on the whole, the Big Ten has been disappointing, because I think we thought there were going to be these powers. You talk about Wisconsin losing to BYU and, of course, Michigan State losing to Arizona State. It's one thing if you were knocking off one another, which is now starting to happen, but it loses a little bit of its luster when those two, you know, Michigan State and Wisconsin specifically lose early out of conference. Now, all of a sudden, that parity that's in the Big Ten, while, you know, it's parity, it's great to see teams competing, it also doesn't quite have the same impact nationally, because, let's face it, Michigan State's out of the playoff race already. Wisconsin,
yeah,
especially now that they've lost, out of the playoff race already.
Yeah.
So it changes, I think, the perspective on the Big Ten. And, I mean, Michigan, different story here, but Michigan losing to Notre Dame early, you know, kind of took them out of the national spotlight for the last 6 weeks. Now they're right back in it. But it's interesting. So I think going forward now, well, before I even get too far ahead of ourselves, what do you make of Michigan State this weekend? Michigan at Michigan State. Now the Spartans, of course, rebound last week and knock off Penn State. Do you think that Michigan gets through that game in East Lansing? This is one that Jim Harbaugh, the monkey's got to get off his back.
I know.
You know, what do you make of that one?
I think Michigan's going to win that game, but I think it's on the strength of their pass defense. Because if you look at what Michigan State's been able to do, you know, LJ Scott hadn't been healthy. It happened 2 years for them at that tailback spot. So it hasn't been as simple of an offense as D'Antonio is, you know, his defense and his offense are typically very simple. They're just very good at executing a very simple plan, but they can't run the football very well. So they're having to rely on Lewerke's arm, and he's done a great job hitting Felton Davis the third and his receivers, and they've done a good job in that area, but I don't think they're going to be able to have nearly as much success against that Michigan pass defense, which has just been awesome. I mean, Hornibrook had no chance on Saturday, and I think it's going to be
dominated.
Dominated, and I think Michigan State just won't be able to score enough points. I think it'll probably be a low-scoring game, but I think Michigan, that defense is just going to be too tough for Lewerke and company, and they're not multi-dimensional enough, I think, to be able to attack that Michigan defense. But I think it's going to be close because the environment's going to be pretty raucous, and they have a lot of hate for each other, and they always – Michigan State has always been there to give Michigan a good game, even when Michigan's been a more dominant and a better team. So I think that that'll hold true again this year. But I think Michigan will get the win on the road.
Yeah, rivalry game, emotional game. You got to think Michigan State is going to give Michigan their best shot, but it feels like the Wolverines are starting to click on those cylinders that maybe they weren't hitting on early in the season. Of course, in that Notre Dame game, I mean, you think about that Notre Dame game early. Michigan played about as poorly as they could play for almost the entire 60 minutes and still had the ball at midfield with a minute left. I mean,
especially the first half.
Exactly.
I mean, it was almost like they weren't ready to start playing football in the beginning of the season. You know, the first half, it was like, holy cow, now all of a sudden they've given up 21 points. How do you climb out of that hole? And Wimbush had, you know, maybe the best game of his life in that game. Yeah. But aside from that, I think we're just now learning how great Notre Dame is defensively. I mean, they are really good. So now that we're learning that, we look back and say, okay, how nearly impossible was that for Michigan to be able to come back in that game against that defense? And to your point, they still almost did on the road.
Exactly. So when you play as poorly as they did early in the year, new quarterback, I just thought that Michigan was primed to be a team that could make a run like we're seeing right now. If they get through Michigan State, they have Penn State at home in 2 weeks after a bye. But you know, you're looking at a schedule down the stretch. If they can get through these next four games, you set up a showdown with Ohio State. Real quickly, do you think Michigan stands toe-to-toe with Ohio State? Do you think there's a realistic chance? Put a number on it. Percentage-wise, what chance would you give Michigan to beat Ohio State finally this year?
Well, if I had to do it, like, you know, a lot of times we talk about this team or that team on a neutral field, you know, without the home field and everything, it's pretty close to 50% in my mind. I would say probably somewhere in the 45, 55. It's in Columbus, so that knocks it down a little bit, so I would say maybe 40-60 for Michigan to get the win. I love the way Haskins is playing in that offense. Yeah. I think that he's just been so spectacular. He's the, you know, in that whole Michigan schedule, he's really the guy that I think could attack that pass defense. That's going to be fascinating to watch when those two strengths come together. I have been disappointed with Ohio State in terms of their inability to really run the ball very effectively. And I was also I know sometimes these teams get into these lows in the middle of the season. Ohio State has Indiana and Minnesota on the schedule. It's just the fact that Ibrahim ran for 100 yards in the first half and two touchdowns against Ohio State was really kind of surprising to me. Their inability to stop that run. And Minnesota had two 75-yard drives in the first half. And maybe they needed to wake up, and they did in the second half. But to me, the defense is a little bit of a concern. You see Urban Meyer with, like, hand on hips. You know, and he's just like, oh, you know, what am I going to do with this defense? So to me, it's like that could be an issue. So that makes that game a little bit closer in my mind.
You know, you talk about Indiana and Minnesota both just being pesky with Ohio State over the last couple of weeks. You know, that say what you want about the way Nick Saban handles the media, the way he carries himself week to week. This is why, because Alabama doesn't have the same problems that Ohio State has had, where or not just Ohio State, not to single them out. Plenty of teams in the top 5 or 10, they've had these sleepwalking games where even if they don't get upset, they're playing. I mean, you talk about Clemson with Syracuse, and I know there was some other circumstances in that game too. You talk about Notre Dame with Pitt. I mean, these great elite teams, I tweeted this on Saturday, it's like when you watch these elite teams play down to the level of their competition as 3 touchdown favorites or more, this is why Nick Saban acts the way he acts. And some people don't like it, but it works, like it or not. And I think Ohio State is going to be fine, like you said. They've certainly got the most talent in the Big Ten. Michigan's probably nipping on their heels. I tell you what, though. You talk about Michigan, Ohio State. That might be the Big Ten's now. I mean, they're down to 2 teams in the playoff race. Just a whole bunch of wacky stuff happens. You talk about Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Penn State all with 2 losses now. I mean, they have eliminated themselves, a lot of those schools already. If Michigan were to lose over the next 2 weeks, or I guess 3, counting the bye week there, Now all of a sudden you're down to Ohio State as an unbeaten and everybody else has two losses or more.
Yeah.
It's a totally different picture than we thought we'd see.
We'll keep an eye on Bosa too, because he's
right.
You know, Ohio State's schedule really gets tough mid-November when they've got Michigan State and I think somebody else, and then the Michigan game. So I think the two of the last three games it gets tough. I would think Bosa, you know, that's sort of the plan. I think probably ideally they'd love to have him back the week before Michigan State, get hit a little bit, get in a little bit more game shape, and then be ready to go for Michigan State for that tough stretch, you know, and then the Big Ten championship after that. So we'll keep an eye on that. But I agree with you on the fact that beginning of the year, it's, does the Big Ten have a chance to get two teams in? Does the SEC have a chance to get two teams in? And now the Big Ten is already sort of eliminating themselves without a conference losses and cannibalizing themselves from within. And now the SEC is even doing that within conference as they start to beat each other up. You know, Mississippi State loses, and then Auburn loses, and then LSU loses, and then LSU comes back to beat Georgia. You know, it's like everybody's beating everybody else. All have one loss, LSU, Florida, Georgia, Auburn now two losses because they lose to Tennessee. You get the cannibalization, and Alabama just is light years ahead of everybody else. And is everybody else now just reduced to the spoiler role in terms of not being able to be that second team out of the SEC to get in?
Exactly. And, you know, another conference I want to kind of pivot to really quickly here that is also cannibalizing itself, the Big 12. I mean, the Big 12 now is Oklahoma, Texas, and West Virginia. It seems like those are the three, you know, that are the favorites in the conference, at least in my mind. I know Texas Tech has played well. They had a nice win over TCU last Thursday night. But for all intents and purposes, it's those three. If you had to bet on one of those three, Oklahoma, Texas, or West Virginia, to come out with one loss, to finish 12-1 and win the Big 12, which one would you bet on?
As much as I like the way Texas is playing, and if Ellinger can get back healthy and you know, continue to develop with those big receivers they have down there, they can run the football, and they're scary, young, and good on defense, they have to beat Oklahoma twice. You know, that's kind of the thing. And Oklahoma's defense is not good. I will give it that. So I think the Big 12 championship game would be another shootout between those two teams like we saw in Dallas. But to have to beat Kyler Murray twice, we certainly saw at the end of that game, they're never out of it if he's on the field. I mean, as long as there's a second left on the clock, Oklahoma has a chance with Murray, and to have to beat him twice. That's why I would give the nod to Oklahoma over Texas. But I've been thoroughly impressed with Herman and the job he's done with Texas this year, and I think either one of those teams could. I think those two teams are the class. Seeing West Virginia last week, I was shocked at how bad they were. I mean, just offensively, the Iowa State completely took them out. Greer had, 100 yards passing and two interceptions?
Yeah, it's just inexplicable. I mean, I understand Matt Campbell at Iowa State has done a great job building that program. That was the third, top 10 win that he's had at Iowa State. So, I mean, they have a history of doing this, but that doesn't matter. I mean, when you're West Virginia and you're trying to step up in class and prove that you belong as a top 10 program, you cannot lay an egg like that against a middle of the road Big 12 program. And I mean, it was crazy last week, Chris. Every week I do a podcast where I just do my top 10, and I try to do it just on the way the teams have played. I don't use preseason rankings. I don't move teams up or down like we see a lot of times in the regular polls. I'm just a big look at the resume, look at what they've done on paper, and rank them guy. And I had West Virginia 5, and I even said on the podcast, I was like, I don't even know that I really believe this, because a lot of teams below them have played some stinkers, and it's why I kept them ahead of, you know, teams even like Clemson, who has played a couple poor games. But West Virginia hadn't wowed us at any point. Like, even throughout going, 5-0 to start the season, it was a close win over Texas Tech. It was a win over Tennessee, which up until last week, Tennessee didn't look like, you know, anywhere close to an average football team. It was just, there wasn't an opportunity. Of course, the Kansas game, the only one by 16. I mean, this is the thing about Dana Holgorsen, is you go back to, 2012, 2013, the Geno Smith year, where they got out to a hot start, but they can't play consistently. They can't get up week to week. And I'm worried for West Virginia that they may be headed towards something similar now, where, you know, you go on the road to Texas in a few weeks. You still have Oklahoma, of course. And then Baylor, TCU, and Oklahoma State, none of those three are gimmies either. I mean, I think it's much more likely West Virginia goes 8-4 than 11-1 at this point.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Remember they had that game against NC State canceled because of the hurricane? I kind of felt like they needed that and we needed that. We needed to get that early test for both of those teams. Because West Virginia, to your point, is kind of like Colorado. kind of like NC State. Mm-hmm. You have to be reminded that they're undefeated. You have to say, like, hey, guess what? If NC State beats Clemson this week, whoa, now all of a sudden we got to start talking about NC State as a team that could go to the college football playoff. And no one's even thought about that in a million years. But these teams sort of are lurking. Now, Colorado got their comeuppance over the weekend, and so did West Virginia. You know, the cream is starting to rise to the top, and there'll be another opportunity for that this weekend.
You know, and you talk about Texas and having to beat Kyler Murray twice. You know, this is the thing. I love Tom Herman. He's been fantastic as an underdog. He has not been nearly as good as a favorite. Like, even going back to Houston, Houston did a great job getting up to beat the likes of Oklahoma or Florida State. I mean, you think about those big wins that they had, but then they would lose games to pretty average teams in the American Conference in the 2 years that he was there. They didn't handle success and prosperity nearly as well. And you nearly saw it happen last week against Baylor. Yeah. I mean, 23-17, they barely get out alive against the Bears. And that was a game that I thought it was going to be a letdown. I wanted a good little bit of money on Baylor because I thought that that was a prime letdown spot for them. So I think the battle for Texas is going to be, look, you've had a chip on your shoulder now for 2 years under Tom Herman. You've been fighting for respect. How do you handle it now that you're going to be the favorite? You're the team getting pat on the back. They go on the road to Oklahoma State in 2 weeks. So this bye week might come at a good time for them, honestly, to kind of readjust and get ready for that home stretch. But I would be with you. I would say Oklahoma. I wouldn't bet against them. I've been big on the Sooners all year. Didn't shock me they lost to Texas, but also I think they're primed. They certainly have the most talent and definitely the best player in the Big 12. So with that being said, one last topic to get with you, Chris. I found it fascinating as I was getting ready for the podcast. How many teams do you think, just off the top of your head, from the preseason top 10 already have two losses?
Well, you're right. Preseason top 10 with two losses. I'm going to take a stab, just a stab at it. It's pretty good. I mean, you got Wisconsin in there for sure.
Yep.
You got Penn State in there probably, right?
Yep, that's two.
You got Auburn probably as well.
That's three.
As I'm jogging, trying to think about who else would have been in the top 10. Stanford?
Nope, they were outside.
They were outside. Maybe Florida State. Was Florida State in the top 10? I think they were more like 13.
No, they were further back. Yeah, they were further back.
Okay, so those are the ones I've got in my mind. Who else is up there?
So the five are Auburn, Penn State, Wisconsin, like you said, Washington.
Yep. Oh, yeah, Washington, right.
And Miami.
Oh, yeah, Miami.
Miami, preseason top 10.
Miami was not, it wasn't Florida State. It was neither one of them.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, wow.
So half of the top 10 already, it's October 15th. We're already missing half the top 10 with two losses. It's crazy to me. So of those five teams, I'll read them off one more time. Auburn, Penn State, Washington, Wisconsin, Miami. Which of those teams and programs should be panicking the most right now?
Well, to me, it's Florida State. I mean, to me, Washington has just played – you know, I mean, they lost to Auburn and Oregon. They lost to Auburn and Atlanta and Oregon on the road. There's no shame in that. And they played both those games really tight.
Right.
Penn State, same way. They have two really heartbreaking home losses against really good football teams. So, to me, those teams are in great shape. They're fine. Auburn is, too. I mean, the schedule is brutal for Auburn. That's not a very good loss. It was a good look against Tennessee at home. But they're still fine. Miami is still building. You know, all last year, we would just razz Jonathan Vilma about whether they're back. Like, they're back, man. They're undefeated. They're back. He insisted that they were not back, and he's right. They aren't, but they're getting them. They're on their way. They got to figure out the quarterback stuff. Pulling Perry after one series or whatever
so
it was
quickly.
On Saturday.
Yeah.
It was just like, what do you – to me, that's defeatist, and it worked out that way. But to me, it's Florida State.
Well, remember, Florida State wasn't in this top 10. You wanted to put him there.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to put it there. Who am I missing on that one?
Wisconsin, Washington.
Oh,
you said.
Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin.
Okay, then I'll wrap it up by saying I don't think either one of them have – any of them have really anything to panic about. You know what I'm saying? I think they're all still in good shape. They're all good programs. I think too much was expected of Miami. Look at the way they finished the season last year.
Right.
I wouldn't have put them in the top 10 this year to begin with. Wisconsin, yeah, I think it's been a little bit of a disappointment for them. You know, they lose their best receiver before the year in Quinton Cephas, and, you know, they have the 2-1 dimensional there. But again, I don't think any of those teams really have anything to panic about. I just think maybe
you know, Miami certainly, and maybe Wisconsin, and probably Auburn a little bit, was a little bit overrated. Jarrett Stidham has been a disappointment. I don't think there's any doubt about it, considering what we thought we might see from him. And they don't have any dynamic players in the backfield. They've had great running backs over the past few years, and they really don't have any game changers back there this time around. I think it's affecting them.
Yep, absolutely it is. And Auburn now actually with three losses. Tennessee was the third loss. To me, it's Auburn. A lot of infighting rumors going on with the program, too, and they've lost so much talent. Stidham's been a disappointment. But there's a few teams up there for sure that have been disappointing. Chris, got to let you go. That was a lot of fun, man. That flew by. Would love to have you on again sometime. And best of luck to your Yellow Jackets down the stretch, by the way. Just hopefully they don't get this, by the way.
Are you talking about the women's tennis team? They're really good. That season's coming up. They're going to crank up, you know, springtime, and we're looking forward to that.
That's the status of Georgia Tech football right now.
It really is.
Well, get this. I'm going to see Hamilton per my girlfriend's request the night Virginia Tech plays Georgia Tech. So I'm very excited about that. Maybe that just shows you how seriously I'm taking that game. I don't know.
Maybe it just shows you where those two programs are. I don't think Virginia Tech's going very far this year either. Yeah. I think the program's heading in the right direction. Yeah. But I think both of those, Virginia Tech will be playing for maybe middle-of-the-road bowl game, and Georgia Tech is playing not to be in the cellar of the conference.
Hey, man, we're in first place in the Coastal right now for now. We'll see how long that lasts. But anyway, yeah, man. Hey, cool. That was a lot of fun. Like I said, I'll let you go. And just tune into ESPN pretty much 7 days a week, and you'll find Chris Cotter somewhere.
Somewhere along the line, yeah.
All right, buddy. Take care.
All right, Josh. See you soon.
All right, see ya. All right, thanks so much to Chris Cotter again for joining me. What a great interview he was. Again, he does the MAC. He does the Sunday afternoon playoff show on ESPN. He does all sorts of college football shows for the Four Letter Network, and he is a good friend of mine. Really excited that we were able to have him on. And now it is time for the JP Top 10, the most exciting part of your week. We start with number 10. It is Oregon, the Oregon Ducks, vaulting into the top 10. And man, if only they had not blown that 17-point lead to Stanford just a few weeks ago, Oregon would be inside my top five right now and sitting very pretty for the college football playoff. This is a team, its best win, of course, is Washington, where on the other hand, that only loss coming to Stanford. Outside of the Washington win, though, that Oregon resume still leaves quite a bit to be desired. The Cal win on the road, fairly nice, but they kind of slummed around with San Jose State, and then early on in the year, they beat Bowling Green and Portland State. The resume has a chance to take a huge step forward. They take on a ranked team in Washington State this week, and then the schedule is manageable. Arizona, UCLA, Utah could be tricky on the road late in the year, and then Arizona State and Oregon State. I think Oregon's resume at the end of the year is going to stack up pretty nicely. I think they have a great chance to be 11-1 going into the Pac-12 championship game. The Pac-12 South is a mess. This Oregon team, if I had to bet on them, I would bet on them to go 12-1. I think that they run the table, and I love what Justin Herbert brings to this team. Look, Mario Cristobal learned a valuable lesson in that Oregon game. He was out-coached in the second half against Stanford, and they collapsed because of it. But Cristobal is recruiting at an elite level. They have the number four recruiting class in the country. Now, that has no impact on this year's team, but what it does signal is that the Ducks are headed in the right direction. They never had a top 10 class under Chip Kelly, so you know the future is bright for Oregon, and Willie Taggart and Mark Helfrich did a decent job of leaving a pretty full cupboard and complement of players for Mario Cristobal. Of course, Justin Herbert being one of them, but their top two rushers as well, CJ Verdell and Travis Dye, are both freshmen. They have six touchdowns on the season, both averaging over 5 yards a carry. So a lot of young talent on Oregon as well. They'll be in the market to replace Justin Herbert after the season. But for now, let's not worry about the future. Let's talk about the present. Oregon could very well go 12-1. And with the number of teams that are losing games rapidly ahead of them, I think the Ducks are in a great chance to make the playoffs. I think they're in a great shape, rather, to make the playoff, just because I think you're going to see several teams ahead of them lose one or two more games down the stretch. All you got to do is just keep winning, and they'll be able to hang their hat on that Washington win as long as the Huskies don't let the bottom fall out from underneath of them throughout the rest of this season. Number nine is Clemson. I'm moving Clemson up here. They're into the top 10. The A&M win is a good win, not a great win. The Georgia Tech win is a good to average win at best. The Wake Forest win, average win at best. They don't have a resume builder, but they've got a chance this weekend. So everything's going to change about this Clemson team. The entire perception of them will be different on Saturday night after they get through NC State, win or lose. If Clemson wins, I imagine I will put them up closer to my top five, especially depending on how they do in the process. Another team that I think is in very good shape to make the playoff. I mean, this schedule just doesn't have an obvious loss anywhere on it. The Coastal Division is a complete wreck. I'll break that down in full later on in the week, but I think that Clemson's going to cakewalk. So I actually think Oregon and Clemson are two teams in very good shape to make the playoff. I just have them at 9-10 right now until their resumes get a little stronger, but all of the teams ahead of them just about have very realistic losses on their schedule. Clemson and Oregon, meanwhile, don't really. The toughest game for both of those two teams probably comes this Saturday. Oregon taking on Washington State on the road. Clemson playing host to NC State. Number eight is Oklahoma. I like the Sooners a lot. I think they're going to win the Big 12, but it still is tricky for them. The Big 12 is a pretty deep conference, maybe the deepest conference outside of the SEC and all the Power Five. They take on TCU this week on the road. Now, TCU has really struggled since that Ohio State game they played on national TV. They lost last week 17-14 to Texas Tech. First time a team has lost to Texas Tech while holding them under 20 points since 2001. So TCU held Texas Tech to just 17 and still couldn't come up with any more than that. They lose that game 17-14. So Oklahoma, I think, should cruise through TCU. They have Kansas State. Then Texas Tech on the road could be a tricky game. And then that West Virginia game as the season finale. Of course, maybe they rematch with Texas or they'll rematch with somebody in the Big 12 title game. So one or two more stumbling blocks on the path for Oklahoma, but I do think the Sooners end up coming out of the Big 12. And if they do it with one loss, they're another team that's going to be right there in the thick of things for the playoff. I would put them as far as their likelihood. I would say it's less likely they make the playoff than Clemson or Oregon, but right now I have them ranked a little bit higher because they have a better loss than Oregon does. That loss to Texas is a good loss. And I think that they've been more impressive than Clemson, even with a loss on their resume, although it's close. Texas is number seven. And of course, look, that was a three-point game. Game came down to the wire 2 weeks ago between the Longhorns and the Sooners. I'm not going to separate them very much in my ranking. So Texas goes one spot ahead of Oklahoma. The Longhorns, their schedule late. They have West Virginia at the beginning of November. That's going to be a huge showdown. I know the Mountaineers lost, so that takes a little bit of the luster off of that game. But Tom Herman, as I mentioned with Chris Cotter, has got to learn how to coach with expectations. Okay, it's one thing when you're the underdog and you have something to prove. How do you do this? How do you do this when you are the team with the target on its back? Very different. So they have Oklahoma State on the road in 2 weeks. They have a bye this Saturday to kind of regroup. I think that's an important time for this bye week. Kind of reassess the team, refocus, re-energize for a five-game stretch at the end of the season that isn't all that daunting outside of West Virginia. Road trip to Texas Tech. Although that Iowa State game looks a little trickier now. The Cyclones are picking things up. And in the Big 12, when it's a league that's as deep as it is, there is no week off in that conference. So Texas is going to have a manageable schedule. I would bet on them probably losing one more game, though, in that stretch. I think Texas finishes the season at 10-2. I think Oklahoma finishes at 11-1. But I do think it is a Longhorn Sooner rematch between those two in the Big 12 championship game. Number six is Florida. I like the Florida Gators here, just barely outside the top five, and I almost had them ahead of my number five team. Look, the LSU win looks even better today after the Tigers did what they did to Georgia. The Mississippi State win looks a little bit better as the Bulldogs start to turn the corner with Joe Moorhead. And that Kentucky loss does not look like a bad loss. So Florida's resume actually stacks up pretty well. I watched a good bit of the Gators game against Vanderbilt. They got out to a very slow start against the Commodores and had to come back in the late in the first half, and then in the second half ultimately pulled away. That was a sleepy game. That's a game you expect to have. You come off of an emotional high beating LSU the week before, a huge breakthrough win for Dan Mullen, and the Gators were playing again with that confidence level, or maybe overconfidence. That's what you have to balance there after back-to-back big wins, Mississippi State and LSU. So Vandy caught their attention. Florida refocused towards the end of the half and pulled away in the second half. I'm not sure this team has the offense to keep up with the likes of Georgia, but I also didn't think LSU did either. And LSU just housed Georgia. I think that was more of a wake-up call for the Bulldogs, though. So I think Florida loses to Georgia in 2 weeks. They also have a bye this week. They face Georgia in Jacksonville in 2 weeks. They also have Missouri and South Carolina in the next few weeks after that. I'm not completely sold yet that Florida is poised for a late season run. I think that they lose to Georgia, and I actually think they lose either to Missouri or to South Carolina, one of those two. Don't forget the Florida State game on the road at the end of the year. Florida State might be playing for a bowl game in that season finale. So I actually think Florida finishes the season at 10-2, maybe even 9-3. I will go 9-3. I'll do it. I'll say 9-3 for Florida. So right now I have them at number six, but I think they will backslide as the second half of the schedule gets a little bit tougher. Michigan is my number five, and they are bumping way up. I talked about them at length with Chris Cotter. I don't have to get into much of it here, but Michigan does have a difficult stretch to finish this season. Love what they're doing defensively. This is one of the best defenses in the entire country. Don Brown has been lights out since he's come over as the defensive coordinator from Boston College. Michigan State on the road, never easy. The Spartans have been the better program for the last decade. Jim Harbaugh has had a heck of a time trying to get past Michigan State. Mark D'Antonio will have that team ready, but I think the Spartans coming off of such a tough win this week against Penn State, I don't know that they can replicate that same magic against a Michigan team that has so much talent. I said before the year, I thought Michigan was going to win the Big Ten, and I'm starting to believe in that again. I was off the Michigan bandwagon when they lost to Notre Dame, and then even after a really kind of shaky game against Northwestern a few weeks ago, I'm starting to believe in Michigan again. Shea Patterson had an 80-yard touchdown run in that game. The defense completely suffocated Jonathan Taylor and Alex Hornibrook. This two-game stretch is big. If you get through Michigan State, you get through Penn State, you get Rutgers in Indiana over the next 2 weeks to get ready for Ohio State. But there are only two teams left in the Big Ten with a chance. That is Michigan, and that is Ohio State. And the Buckeyes are my number four team. So the Buckeyes are my number four team here. So that's going to be an interesting storyline to watch as the season unfolds. Pretty much if Michigan can get through the next month unscathed, we could be looking at an elimination game in the playoff, which would be awesome for college football to see those two playing for not only a Big Ten championships berth, but also at least keeping your hopes alive in the playoff for both teams. Usually it's just Ohio State playing for that, but Michigan might have something on the line as well. I'm going to go Michigan regular season. I'm going to go, man, do I do it? Do I go ahead and stick true to my preseason prediction? I'm going to do it. I'm going to say 11-1 for Michigan. I think the Wolverines run the table. I think they beat Ohio State in the horseshoe. I know Chris Cotter was high on the Buckeyes, even with a couple shaky performances the last 2 weeks. Ohio State at number four. To me, look, they have the talent. They haven't put it together. They've yet to put it together for a full four quarters. Even in that TCU game, they really won the game on about a four-minute stretch in the third quarter where they scored three touchdowns. Outside of that, TCU, a pretty average team in the Big 12 right now, stood toe-to-toe with Ohio State. So I know we see the talent, but at some point you've got to produce. You've got to do it on the field. I am starting to lose my confidence in the Buckeyes. I'm not changing what I said a week ago in the last few weeks, for that matter, that their ceiling is as high as Alabama's. You look down the roster, the amount of talent that's on the Buckeyes roster, very little difference between them and Alabama. Very little, okay? They have equally as dynamic of a quarterback in Dwayne Haskins. They have great running backs in J.K. Dobbins and Mike Weber. Great receivers, of course, Paris Campbell, Johnny Dixon, K.J. Hill. I mean, just talent litters this team. Chris Cotter brought up Nick Bosa being injured on the defensive line. That is definitely something to keep an eye on down the stretch. But assuming they get Bosa back, the defense is every bit as good as Alabama's. Ohio State should be as dominant as the Crimson Tide. Now, the big thing here is if they can just keep winning and they get to that game against Alabama, they get an opportunity to play the Tide, whether that's in a semifinal game or in the championship, they can beat them. In a one-game scenario, they can beat them. It doesn't matter if you're as impressive as them from September to December. All you got to do is get a chance to take them on head-to-head, and maybe the Buckeyes get that chance. But I'm going to go 11-1 for Ohio State. I think they lose to Michigan at the end of the season. The way things are going right now, you've got an Ohio State team trying to find its way. You've got a Michigan team that's only getting better. Notre Dame is number three. Look, the Irish resume got better. Let's put it that way. It got better with Michigan's big win over Wisconsin because that resume was starting to look a lot shakier. Okay, Virginia Tech nearly lost to North Carolina. Stanford was blown out by Utah the week after Notre Dame took care of business. So that resume, while at the time looked really good, all of a sudden those teams that Notre Dame beat don't look that impressive. So the Michigan win is really what's holding Notre Dame up right now. And we'll see what happens with them down the stretch. That was a very predictable letdown game against Pitt. Notre Dame had had a very emotional stretch over the last few weeks, of course, coming off of that big road win in Blacksburg to beat Virginia Tech. And then the week before that, they had taken on Stanford. So it's just when you play these tough games week after week, letdowns happen. Letdowns happen. This is college football, and it's the reality. Now they get a bye week, perfect time for a bye for Notre Dame. They'll regroup. They have Navy after that. I think they have no problem with Navy. Northwestern on the road will give them trouble. And then Florida State at home, Syracuse and USC. I think out of that whole stretch, I actually think Notre Dame does get upset somewhere in there. I'm not calling which game it is. I guess if I had to say the most likely place for them to lose, on the road against Evanston will be tricky. And then Yankee Stadium against Syracuse as well. But also, man, USC on the road. USC is a team that's going to be a lot better in November than they were in September as a young team and the young quarterback start to get more comfortable. So I think 11-1, maybe even 10-2 for Notre Dame. But I'm going to go 11-1, and I think that one loss is enough to keep them out of the playoff ultimately. My top two teams, both in the SEC. I've got LSU number two, and boy, I almost put them number one even with a loss to Florida 2 weeks ago, because that win against Georgia was the single-handedly most dominant game, most impressive performance by a college football team this season, bar none. Georgia has so much talent. They are absolutely loaded on both sides of the ball. I don't care that they have a young defense. It's talented enough. It is most dominant. It's going to have probably 7 or 8 future NFL players across the board. And, of course, on offense, they still have Jake Fromm. They still have elite running backs, Elijah Holyfield, DeAndre Swift, Mecole Harmon at wide receiver, Riley Ridley. I mean, there is so much talent across the board, not to speak of that offensive line. Georgia should have won that football game. I thought Georgia was going to dominate that football game. I came away thoroughly impressed with LSU, and I think the Tigers belong at number two for it. Sneaky here, though, something to keep an eye on. The other wins on that schedule don't look that great either. It's very similar to Notre Dame. That Auburn win looked great at the time. That Miami win early looked great at the time. Neither one of those teams are any good right now. Miami just lost to UVA, and of course Auburn lost to Tennessee. You're talking about Auburn and Miami both losing to two of the most embarrassing programs right now in their respective conferences. I know Virginia's getting better. I know Tennessee is showing moderate improvement in year one under Jeremy Pruitt week to week. But Auburn and Miami were both top 10 wins at the time. Neither one of them are even ranked right now. So LSU, let's pump the brakes on talking about how dominant this resume is, because two wins that we thought were pretty good now all of a sudden are completely irrelevant. But the Georgia win does enough to make up for that quite a bit. And Florida, of course, they also have just a very impressive resume of their own. So that loss for LSU to Florida on the road, not a huge, huge deal breaker here. So I got Alabama and LSU 1-2 right now, but I still don't know that I am willing to say LSU can give Alabama a real, real challenge. I think Alabama is that good. I don't think Alabama is one of the greatest teams of all time, like some people are starting to suggest, but I think Alabama has it all. And look, they played their worst game of the season last week. They laid their egg and they won by 29. That's just the difference for Alabama. Is while I don't think Alabama's ceiling is that much drastically higher than, say, Ohio State or even a team like Georgia or even a team like Michigan, I think if those teams played their absolute A games and Alabama played its B game, B to, you know, A minus game, I think it'd be pretty competitive. I think Oklahoma could give Alabama a heck of a game. I actually think Oklahoma might be better equipped to beat Alabama than anybody on this schedule or in the country. But the thing about Alabama is their floor is so much higher than everybody else's. That's the difference, right? Because you see some of these other teams' floor, and they're letting teams like Syracuse and Pittsburgh and, you know, Kentucky's a good team, but, you know, Mississippi State and Maryland hang around. Like, those teams shouldn't be hanging around against top five, top 10 teams. Alabama doesn't let that happen. So while I don't know that Alabama's ceiling, again, is that much higher, it's higher, but not that much higher than anyone else's in the top five or six, it's that their floor is that much higher. That's the difference. And hopefully Tua Tagovailoa is healthy. I know he missed most of the second half with a knee injury that he's been dealing with the last few weeks. He re-aggravated that against Missouri. Hopefully he's okay. You don't want that to play a role in Alabama's fate. Although they do have Jalen Hurts there just waiting in the wings. Pretty convenient when you can bring in a former SEC Offensive Player of the Year to replace your Heisman frontrunner quarterback. Must be nice, Nick Saban. Look, Alabama, again, with that high floor, the way I love it or hate it, Nick Saban, the way he deals with the media, the way he's always on edge, the way he's constantly guarding against disappointment, there's a reason why he does that, and that method has proven to be successful. It works, and Alabama does not suffer letdown games. They don't get upset by unranked teams. They don't hang around with bad football teams. They get beat by good teams. That's the only time Alabama's ever lost. They don't lose to unranked teams. It doesn't happen. And the rest of the way for Alabama, of course, they have LSU in a few weeks. Auburn game all of a sudden doesn't look nearly as daunting. I know it's a rivalry game, but I think Alabama comes out and gets revenge on the Tigers. I'm going to say for Alabama, they go 12-0. I think they go 12-0 in the regular season. And then I still think Georgia's going to make its way through the East. Florida game looks pretty interesting, but I think the Bulldogs rebound. I think they go 11-1 down the stretch. So I'm going to say 12-0 for Alabama. For LSU, man, I think they lose to Alabama, and I actually think Mississippi State or Texas A&M will give them a game. Can't see the loss happening. Texas A&M's a tough one, but I'm going to go 10-2. I'm going to go 10-2 for LSU. Ohio State, I already had them at 11-1. So there you have it. I think at season's end, from the JP Top 10, to recap it real quick, and with my final prediction for their final records, I'm going to say Alabama number one right now. The rankings are right now, but the records are where I think they'll end up. So my number one team right now, Alabama, I think they go 12-0. LSU number two, I think they go 10-2. Notre Dame 11-1. Ohio State is next, 11-1. Michigan 11-1. Florida 9-3. Texas 10-2. Oklahoma 11-1. Clemson 12-0. And Oregon 11-1. Now, I didn't factor in conference championship games here, but if I had to project the playoff field right now, the last thing I'll do, I'll start doing this every podcast, I think Alabama's going to be the number one seed. I think Clemson will end up sneaking in as the number two seed. And then I think it's going to be really interesting. I think Michigan will be the three. And I'm going to say, it's going to come down to Michigan, Oklahoma, and Oregon for that spot under this circumstance. I'm doing this on the fly. Okay, so you're hearing my real live thoughts here. I'm going to say of those three, Michigan in, I'm going to say that Oklahoma gets in. I think they'll have a little bit stronger resume. Again, the Pac-12 is so weak, I think that ultimately ends up hurting Oregon. So tough road ahead of them, but again, you're talking about needing a lot of teams to keep winning out to stay ahead of the Ducks. I think the Ducks are in great shape as long as they take care of their own business. So there you have it. I think right now the playoff will be Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, Oklahoma. I'm sure I'll be wrong. We'll find out why in the next few weeks. Don't forget, guys, in just a couple days, I'll have the ACC edition of the podcast. Kyle Bailey back this week. Alex Weaver should be back as well. We'll talk about Clemson, NC State, which is a huge game for the ACC and the country this weekend. We'll also talk about Virginia Tech overcoming North Carolina, Miami's hugely disappointing loss to Virginia, and why I am starting to believe that Virginia is a real threat to win the Coastal. Doesn't say much, okay? Doesn't say much, but Virginia at least looks like a real threat in that division. So we'll talk about all that and more on the ACC edition of the podcast later this week. Thank you guys so much again for listening. Make sure to download, subscribe, resubscribe, all that good stuff, and leave your review. Leave your favorite player of all time, Wave Rider, Chris Cotter's submission. It's got to be better than Wave Rider, okay? He just set the bar way high, okay? You got to jump up and get it. You got to go give me a better name drop than Wave Rider. Thanks again to Chris Cotter for joining me. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you Wednesday.